I marvel at the great variety of plant and animal life that I can see as I look out of my home study window. I can see plants of different shapes and hues, a squirrel scurrying up a large eucalyptus tree, a mourning dove cooing after its mate, and in front of my face, a spider works its way down a porch overhang. Below my window, a sharply marked butterfly flits over a low shrub. Off in the distance, a talented bird warbles. And another with a different talent pecks noisily on a nearby tree, sounding like a muted drill. All of this, and so much more, resides in just one small corner of the world. The world is filled with an incredible array of life forms. Everywhere we look, nature's bounty, nature's diversity appears before us. The physicist Freeman Dyson hypothesized that, as he put it, the universe is constructed according to a principle of maximum diversity. He continues, "The laws of nature and the initial conditions of the universe are such as to make the universe as interesting as possible." What a wonderful idea that creation strives toward maximum diversity. It certainly looks that way here on planet Earth. When we peer into the heavens, we also find diversity there. Stars of many hues, galaxies of several types, luminous gas clouds, comets and meteors, and quasars. Planets of differing sizes are being discovered circling other stars. Perhaps some of these worlds support a great diversity of life forms as well. Now, diversity is a quality that we Unitarian Universalists are very fond of. Diversity of beliefs, diversity of peoples, diversity of cultures and lifestyles. Imagine a human world without diversity, where people look the same, with the same features and the same color skin, or where they have only one lifestyle or all hold the same beliefs. Even a world of nothing but Unitarian Universalists, much as I love them, would be too dull, too much the same for my tastes. And imagine a natural world with the boring sameness of some of our most artificial urban environments, blocks upon blocks of concrete and glass and steel. Diversity in nature is something for us to cherish and to celebrate and to protect and maintain. The seventh principle of the bylaws of our Unitarian Universalist Association calls upon us to affirm and promote respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. We are the only mainline religious denomination to have made this ecological emphasis a part of our official statement of principle. The interdependent web, with its many varied strands, woven so finely together that to set off a tiny vibration in one small corner of the web is to set the whole web trembling. Science tells us how deeply interconnected all existence is. Who would have thought, for instance, that, say 40 years ago, that the manufacture of refrigerators and air conditioners and even the use of a can of hairspray could lead, through the release of chlorofluorocarbons, to a dangerous hole in the protective layer of ozone over Antarctica? Some years ago, I heard a comedian lampoon this costly mistake. "Ladies and gentlemen," he said, "look what we've gone and done now. We broke the sky." We didn't foresee the consequences of our actions, that in using CFCs in our part of the web, we would injure a far distant part of it. By the time we realized it, great damage had already been done. Fortunately, in the 1980s, nations came together on this issue and agreed to halt the production of CFCs. The results constitute an environmental success story. It has been predicted recently that the Antarctic ozone hole that we caused will disappear by about the year 2050. So, dangerous ecological situations that we create can be turned around. One of the dangerous situations we have created, as you know, and as most scientists confirm, is the warming of the planet. Climate change occurs naturally, of course, but it seems that we have accelerated the process in one direction. This one critical issue brought over 400,000 concerned people out to a march in the streets of New York a couple of weeks ago to make their point as the United Nations convened a climate justice summit. Many groups, including our Unitarian Universalist Association, endorsed this march. Clearly, large numbers of people now understand that there is a reason to be concerned. Since 1970, the oceans are warmer by a full degree Fahrenheit, and average global temperature has risen by 1 degree in the last century. That may not sound like much, but as I'm sure you know, this little change and the greater changes predicted in the next 100 years, if we don't reduce our carbon output, will have profound implications, resulting in the flooding of major cities, increased hurricanes, the mass spreading of diseases, crop failures, extinction of species who dwell in warmer climates, and other effects, not just species who dwell in warmer climates, those who dwell in and thrive on cold climates. And most of us have seen those heartbreaking pictures of the polar bear standing on what's left of a piece of ice. The number 350 is significant with regard to climate change because it is the number of parts per million of carbon dioxide that scientists say is the number we must stay under if we are to reverse the effects of rising temperatures that we have caused by burning fossil fuels. Well, we are now close to 400 parts per million, so we're already well beyond that limit. People who are observing today's grassroots 350 effort are doing things like installing solar panels, planting trees, establishing community produce gardens, engaging in political campaigns to support carbon emission reduction, and pledging to reduce their own carbon emissions. As I was writing these words about carbon emissions, I kept feeling restless to go out. After all, in the back of my mind, I knew I had some errands to run, had to go to the bank, had to pick up a new picture frame, some groceries, and so on. And I thought I had time to stop writing and accomplish maybe one or two, but not all of these errands. Mindful, though, of what I was writing about, I decided to wait a day on the errands, to map out locations and consolidate my trips, making one trip when I had time instead of three or four at different times. I soon realized that my restlessness, my impulse to go out and squeeze in an errand or two, was really because I just wanted to get out from behind the computer for a while. So instead of burning fossil fuels, I went out and I took a pleasant stroll. Consolidating my trips on another day prevented some of the carbon emissions I would have produced. I know I can do this much more, and I know we all can. What comes to mind is that phrase, I think from World War II. I used to see it in cartoons when I was a kid. Is this trip really necessary? As that was to conserve fuel for the war effort. But we can ask ourselves that same question and try to consolidate our trips and make fewer of them, at least our trips using fossil fuels. I'm sure many of you have heard of the butterfly effect from chaos theory, in which it is said, metaphorically as an illustration, that as small a thing as the flapping of a butterfly's wings in China could cause a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico. It can be demonstrated mathematically that a very small change, when fed back into a system again and again, can grow exponentially to produce a very large and unpredictable effect. In a complex system like weather, widely diverse elements create a spontaneous and deep interconnectedness. And when one element is slightly altered, all the others are affected. How intricately interwoven is this great web of existence? One interesting example of the intricacies of the interdependent web is the phenomenon, maybe some of you have heard of coastal upwelling. There is an area along the northern coast of California and Oregon that is unique to this continent. It's one of just four areas on the planet that experience upwelling. Upwelling is the flowing of cold water, which is full of nutrients, up toward the shoreline from the ocean depths. It is caused by a wind blowing parallel to the shore and the spin of the earth, that combination of motion. When the nutrient-laden water is churned up, carried up, the plankton that are there feed and multiply, and then they are fed upon in turn by other species such as anchovies, herring, and whales. And then some of these species in turn provide food for others, like sea lions and sharks and some other species of whale. These regions of upwelling on the planet are vital. The few areas in which they occur, a part of the coast of Peru and Chile, a part of the West African coast, the Canary Island region, and our own Northern California and Oregon coastline, together these comprise less than 1/1000th of the Earth's surface, yet they produce more than 1/3 of the world's fish. Many of these fish depend upon this upwelling phenomenon. We depend for our very lives on a diverse and deeply interconnected system of living things, organisms that control the mixture of gases in the air, that create and nourish soil, that pollinate crops, that recycle nutrients and fresh water. As we all know, the biodiversity which has driven evolution and which sustains our lives here on this planet has decreased due to our tampering with and sometimes breaking some of the strands of the great web of life. I'm sure you have heard here and there the staggering figures about the extinction of species that humankind is responsible for. We are driving somewhere around 100 species every day to extinction. It's a rate greater than the natural extinction of species 65 million years ago that resulted most likely from a comet impact. 100 species a day, vanishing, never to return. It's a marvel that there are that many species in the first place. It has been estimated that there are 5 million to 30 million different life forms, of which only 1.7 million have been cataloged. Most of the human-caused extinctions are occurring, as we know, in the tropical rainforests, which support nearly 80% of the Earth's species on only 7% of the Earth's surface. These precious forests are being cut down at the rate of a football field every minute of every day. Many of these forests are being felled to make way for lucrative cattle ranches, which supply some of our fast food restaurants with beef. America's Big Macs come at a heavy price. In addition to helping to regulate weather cycles upon which we depend, rainforests have provided us with many gifts: natural pest controls, natural genetic variations that boost crop production, and a variety of pharmaceuticals. My mother's life was extended for years because of a Brazilian snake, the pit viper, from which we get Capoten, a heart medication. Increased global temperatures and continued loss of habitat may wipe out more rainforest species, creatures that have evolved over many millennia, some of which we may not have even discovered yet, species that might have enhanced our lives and our health, living things that in any case deserve their place in the great web of life. Each of these extinctions diminishes us and impoverishes the soul of the world. We need not look as far as Brazil to find species in danger of extinction. Many have been annihilated or are now endangered much closer to home. And the unchecked phenomenon of global warming will contribute to further reductions in plant and animal diversity if we don't turn it around. Despite planetary perils, these perils that we've created, there are signs of hope, indications that many people have now awakened enough to try to reweave some of the broken strands of the web. One such effort that I read about particularly inspired me. It's taking place on 3 miles of sand dunes near the LA airport, of all places. The El Segundo Dunes, as they're called. Here, volunteers from many parts of Los Angeles, rich and poor, African American and Asian and Hispanic and white, young people at risk, older people, all come to these dunes and work under the roar of jets taking off, pulling up destructive non-native plants and planting native species that can host the endangered El Segundo blue butterfly, a species that is now found nowhere else. At the beginning of this preservation effort, there were 500 or fewer of these butterflies left. Now, there are 100,000. As the scientist who volunteers on this project, Rudy Matani, says, this effort is about more than one endangered butterfly. It's about a whole complex ecosystem that once thrived in these dunes. Other native species have also dwindled or disappeared from the dunes, and they are now being very carefully reintroduced. Matoni has monitored hundreds of species at the dunes, and he says there are more to be discovered just in this little 3-mile strip of land. As he puts it, we have six different species of ants, 13 species of stink bugs, 70 species of spiders, and a species of Jerusalem cricket that hasn't even been fully named yet. And he says, how can we know what is happening in the upper Amazon rainforests when we don't have all the species named at the airport near downtown LA? What appeals to me about this story of restoration is that it is taking place right next door to the site of some of the worst urban problems anywhere. There, on this little stretch of beach, people of all colors escape inner city problems and come together to work at restoring the soul of the dunes and quite possibly their own souls as well. It is, after all, a deep soul connection of creature to living creature that is made when we help to mend the tears in the web of life. It is an act of soul connection. And I would say it's a sacred act to recycle, to restore habitat, to walk or ride a bike instead of driving, if and when we can. There are many hopeful stories like this project, stories of people caring enough to help perhaps just one little animal or to reduce their energy consumption even just a bit. There is one long-term project like this right here in Hayward. The volunteers working at the Eden Landing Ecological Reserve that have been restoring more than 6,000 acres of tidal wildlife habitat, part of a larger effort to replenish the ecosystem of the bay and to increase habitat for certain endangered waterfowl, shorebirds, and fish. These kinds of projects may seem like a drop in the bucket next to the destruction that is also going on, but each small effort multiplied over and over can lead to significant change, like that distant flapping of a butterfly's wing bringing on a great storm in the Gulf. In the mythical biblical story of the flood, God tells Noah to find two of every living being to bring onto the ark. This myth acknowledges the importance of biodiversity when you think about it. God says, in effect, thou shalt preserve all the species. Now, to really get two of every species, Noah would have had to work day and night. If he could somehow collect them at a rate of one per minute, all day, every day, it would take him between 10 and 60 years to collect them all. Thank you. This is how rich and abundant creatures are in this great web of existence, just here on this one planet. So may we find ways to step lightly upon the web. May we treat it gently and mindfully. And may we discover and engage in efforts, large or small, to help reweave the broken strands of the web of life. These closing words are from the poet Denise Levertov, titled The Web. Intricate and untraceable, weaving and interweaving, dark strand with light, designed beyond all spiderly contrivance to link, not to entrap. Elation, grief, joy, contrition, entwined, shaking, changing, forever forming, transforming. All praise to the great web.